This is Friday, December 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, Fidel Castro is gone.
The next president of Cuba will not be a Castro, will not have fought in the revolution, and just by virtue of that alone, it will be a new era being ushered in.
That man spent 5 years of his life in a Cuban jail. We'll talk with him. Also ahead, the procession continues bringing Castro's remains to his hometown, but our correspondent in Havana says the reaction of Cubans along the way is surprising. And fans of the late heavyweight boxing champion Muhammad Ali and Brazilian football star Pele will have the opportunity to buy some of their personal items this week. David Byrd will tell us more. It's all on today's International Edition. This is International Edition. Mourning for Fidel Castro has reached some near-religious peaks of public adulation across Cuba since his death at the age of 90 on November 25th. Reports are telling of huge crowds shouting his name and lining the roads to salute the funeral procession, carrying his ashes from Havana to the eastern city of Santiago. We welcome to International Edition Ignacio Gonzalez. He is a correspondent for VOA Sister Networks, Radio and TV Martí. He joins us from Havana. Ignacio, tell us about the procession carrying Fidel's ashes from Havana to Santiago.
So, actually, in this moment, the caravan is up of Camagüey province and is addressed to Guaymaro, located in the Tunas province. And from there, they will continue toward the province of Granma. Once in Bahia, the city of Granma, in the hours of the night, there will be a vigil until dawn of December the 3rd. And from there, they will leave at 7 in the morning toward the province of Santiago de Cuba. People continue his normal life right here in the city and also along the country. And there are not pains of feelings. There is not, you can look at the face of the Cubans, they are not reflecting really pain. They just see the caravan pass and they just, with the Cuban flag and that stuff, but they basically did not feel anything. And I think that's because for Cuban, Fidel Castro has already disappeared from 2006 when he gives the power to his brother Raul Castro. But nevertheless, Fidel is a political figure that woke up a lot of opposing passions in the island. There exists a lot of people that sees on the figure of Castro a hero, and there are older people that sees on the figure of Castro a dictator.
Ignacio, there have been some reports that those not showing support for Fidel on this procession are facing some problems from Cuban authorities. Can you confirm that? Is that happening?
Well, actually, those nationals that are facing problems with the Cuban authorities are some oppositors. Some of them want to go out to the streets, and they are surrounded by the police, and the police do not let them go out of their houses. But those are the minority, because something significant at this historical time is the lack of reaction concerning the political opponents movement, which have not shown themselves on the streets.
Well, as you know, neither President Obama or Vice President Biden will be attending the funeral, sending some other representative to the funeral. Is this being seen as a slight at all by the Cuban government?
Well, not by the Cuban government, but the Cuban people were expecting more about President Obama, and because Obama has created a great impact in the Cuban people. So Obama is someone seen by the Cubans like an intelligent president. So a lot of people said, okay, Fidel Castro is a dictator, he's a martyr, or he's a hero, or whatever. But anyway, he's an international political figure. So why not Obama may come to Cuba? That would be something very, I mean, the Cuban would like to have such a figure here in the island.
Ignacio Gonzalez of our sister network's radio and TV Marte correspondent, along with his dog in Havana. Ignacio, thank you so much for being with us here on International Edition. Alan Gross was imprisoned in Cuba for 5 years before he was released in December of 2014. Gross was a subcontractor to the U.S. Agency for International Development and was held in a Cuban prison for trying to connect the island's small Jewish community to the Internet. He reacted to the death of Fidel Castro on Twitter, where he wrote, "History will never absolve him," meaning Castro, "but perhaps now the voices of Cuba will be heard. Speak up, Cuba." Alan Gross joins us now on Skype here on International Edition. Alan, thanks for being with us. You seemingly there have drawn a line between the Cuban people and Fidel Castro and presumably his brother, who now runs the country. If that is indeed the case, you want to expand on that if you could?
Well, you know, coincidentally, in this morning's Washington Post is an op-ed piece, opinion piece by Rosa Baya of Cuba Decide. And, you know, essentially what she's saying is Cubans have to decide what to do, you know, with their lives. The future of Cuba is their decision, and that they need support from the world, from the free world, but that they're the ones that need to take responsibility for their futures. And I think that that's wonderful. I think that that's exact. I agree with that 110%. Cubans have to aggregate their voices so that the government can hear them.
Do you see that in the offing?
Look, nothing is going to change unless people change things. The environment has stagnated. You know, it's like riding a bicycle. When you stop pedaling, you slow down, and then eventually you fall off, you fall down. Cuba is falling down, and I think the only thing that will really move Cuba into this century is the voice of the people and the collective action of the people. I'm not talking about a revolution, a violent revolution in any stretch of the imagination, and neither are they. The people who are promoting this want a peaceful dialogue with the government so that they can express their interest in having a partnership and moving forward. And I agree with that, and I think it's not doable unless people do it. It's as
well,
simple as that.
Are they? Is it possible to do it with Raul Castro as the leader of that government?
Well, you know, I can't answer that. I think, first of all, he's going to leave in 2018. So the chances of anything happening of major proportions before he leaves, I think there's a low chance of that happening. And I don't think that there's enough time between now and the time that he leaves to fully organize and fund what needs to be done. And so the answer is, I don't think it's realistic. However, if the government follows through in its plans to elevate Miguel Diaz-Balart, Miguel Diaz-Canal from first vice president to president, as opposed to someone else coming in, and also depending on how much power and control Raul's son and son-in-law exercise, I think there's a chance that some substantial changes in a very positive way will occur.
Donald Trump takes office in January. He's used one of his frequent tweets to say, as you well know, if Cuba is unwilling to make a better deal for the Cuban people, the Cuban-American people, and the U.S. as a whole, I will terminate the deal. How do you see the possibility of what is in the future under a Trump administration as far as U.S.-Cuba relations are concerned?
Well, you know, Donald Trump needs to become more familiar with the role of the president, and he needs to have a bigger view of what it means to improve relations with neighbors. Better deal. I don't know what that means, and he hasn't defined that, frankly. I believe it's very important that when we say we want the government of Cuba to get out of the way of the private sector in Cuba, to respect the human rights and the civil rights of Cubanos, if we want their government to get out of the way, then we need to get out of the way too. The United States government is in the way. We have an embargo that is inhibiting the growth of the private sector of Cuba. We support private sector development all over the world. We advocate private sector and private sector development in this country as one of our founding principles of the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The pursuit of happiness means owning your own, you know, perhaps owning your own business or pursuing your own private jobs to earn a good living, to afford food, clothing, and shelter. And when the United States continues to enforce an embargo on the private sector of Cuba, then the United States is in the way of private sector development in Cuba. And that's not in our best interest. It's not in their best interest. And it's frankly un-American. That's what Fidel Castro has done for 57 years. And that's what his younger brother, who's not so young, is continuing. So Donald Trump needs to take a look at what he's really saying.
On a personal level, do you see yourself ever heading back to Cuba?
Well, I'd go back in a heartbeat if they'd let me. But the government of Cuba doesn't seem to want me to come back just yet. I've sent two communications to their new embassy here, and I've yet to receive a response. And that was about a year ago.
One would think that you would hold at least a little bit higher level of animosity toward that country and its government than you seem to be showing her.
Well, let's delineate between the country and the government. The people of Cuba are among the nicest, most generous, warm-hearted people I've ever met anywhere in the world. And frankly, despite their troubled times and their lack of resources, scarcity in resources, in food, for example, my cellmates' families, with whom they had family visitation on a weekly basis, sent food that helped. I mean, we shared it all. It helped to sustain me for 5 years. That's significant in my book. I have to meet them. I have to go there and say thank you to the people who helped sustain me for 5 years. It wasn't the government. It was the people. Now, there are 11.3 million people who live on the island, and not all of them work in the same way that the government of Cuba works. And now that the shadow is gone, the shadow of Fidel Castro is gone. He's ash. And soon his brother will be out of office. And he'll probably die soon too. He's not a young man. But the next president of Cuba will not be a Castro, will not have fought in the revolution. And just by virtue of that alone, it will be a new era being ushered in.
Alan Gross, I thank you so much for being with us here on International Edition. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Well, let's move from that to social media. Andrew Palczewski is here. What's going on?
Well, every time we have a presidential election, there's a tradition several weeks afterwards that at Harvard University, both of the top aides from both sides of the campaigns, the Republican campaign and the Democratic campaign, come together and kind of give a postmortem on the election. And usually it's pretty civil. However, as we know, 2016
civil? And this election? No.
Exactly. 2016 was not exactly a civil election, and this forum, which is usually very civil, wasn't. A lot of accusations of racism and giving credence to the alt-right being thrown around. And social media is reacting, saying, just when you thought the election was over, now we have this. And it shows not only how raw a lot of the feelings are for not just the supporters, but the campaign staff. It also gives a preview of maybe what the next 4 years are going to be like. And that word civil, I don't know that we're going to be seeing a lot of that over the next 4 years based on this.
One can hope so. You know,
we can hope, but this was not a great preview.
Andrew, get in touch with Andrew by?
On Twitter, at APEL.
And me?
At VOA Melman.
One day I'll learn that. It's not that difficult. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
Talk to you again next week. Yeah. This is International Edition. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump has picked retired Marine General James Mattis as his defense secretary, but Mattis still needs a change in the federal law to be able to take the job. Tens of thousands of protesters gathering in Indonesia's capital to demand the arrest of Jakarta's governor South Korea's National Assembly announces a vote to impeach President Park Geun-hye has been postponed until December 9th. Gambia's Electoral Commission says opposition candidate Adama Barrow has won the upset victory in that country's presidential poll, beating longtime ruler Yahya Jammeh. And employers hired American workers at a brisk pace in November, pushing the unemployment rate down to a 9-year low of 4.6%. We talk with Joe Malandrino about that in just a moment.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
As promised, we check in with Jill Malandrino in our New York City office, our studios. What's happening, Jill?
All right. Well, in the markets, we'll wrap this up in a New York minute. For the November was the month to remember. The S&P 500 gained 3.4%. The financials were the top performing sector, up 14%. The Russell 2000 index was the big surprise here, up 11%. That was its best month since October 2011. Now we turn to December, which is what traders look for, a Santa Claus rally. 76% of the time, December is an up month for the market. So expectations are pretty high. We're seeing the consumer really strong, employment data is improving, and it seems to be that the surprise Trump election is really pushing this market along. So expectations are pretty high going into the end of the year.
Even shorter than a New York minute, Joe, thanks again. And one day we'll have an extended conversation, okay?
All right, sounds good.
Have a great weekend. This is International Editions. Fans of Muhammad Ali.
All right, you got it. Thank you.
Fans of Muhammad Ali and Pele will have the opportunity to buy some of their personal items this week at an auction in Los Angeles. Here's International Editions' David Byrd.
If you've ever wanted to own a piece of sports history, now's your chance. Julian's Auction House in Los Angeles will have several items from both Muhammad Ali and Pele up for sale this week. The items were accumulated by renowned photographer Howard Bingham, who, in addition to chronicling Ali's career, also became one of the late champion's best friends. Bingham has offered some rare items, including the gloves Ali wore in his fight against Argentine Oscar Bonavina in 1970. Darian Julian is the owner of Julian's Auctions.
The top lot of the auction is we have fight-worn gloves Ali wore when he fought Oscar Bonavina in 1970, and he won in the 15th round. And they're really important gloves because obviously they're fight-worn gloves, but they're also, you know, a lot of his fight-worn items don't come up for auction very often. We estimate them 60,000 to 80,000.
Bingham is also offering the mouthpiece that Ali wore during his epic 1974 battle with George Foreman, the Rumble in the Jungle, where Ali recaptured the heavyweight title with an 8th-round knockout. Darren Julian says the mouthpiece is an intimate item, but the fact that Ali wore it in the historic fight makes it something a collector would want.
You know, it's such a personal item, but it's something that he wore. It's also signed by Muhammad Ali. We estimate those $5,000 to $7,000, but again, because it's from the historic fight and such a unique item, that it'll sell for a lot more.
Other items up for sale include several drawings by Ali, a box of cigars given to Howard Bingham and autographed by the late Cuban leader Fidel Castro, and a tablecloth on which Ali sketched several images while at dinner with John Travolta, and he and Travolta later autographed. There's also an autographed torch from the 1996 Olympic relay. Football fans might want to bid on some of the memorabilia from Brazilian great Pelé, who helped lead his country to 3 World Cup titles. Darren Julian of Julian's Auction says a jersey worn by the football great at his club Santos is up for bid.
We have a really important shirt of Pelé's that he wore in 1971 in a match of Santos versus Chelsea, where Pelé wore it the entire game, and it's also signed by Pelé. We also have his personal passport from 2005 and 2010.
Other items from Pelé include a 1969 Brazil national football team jersey signed by all members of the team that would eventually go on to win the 1970 World Cup, and Pelé's personal passports used for travel around the world. Several of the footballer's personal items and awards are also up for bid. The auction, called Icons and Idols Sports 2016, also features items from Argentine football star Diego Maradona, Zinedine Zidane of France, England's David Beckham, and modern stars Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. The auction will be held December 3rd. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And that's going to wrap things up for us today. Thank you for listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. You can like us on Facebook at VOA Now, or not like us. We hope you like us. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, Pete Hunley, and I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Russian President Vladimir Putin recently signed an agreement establishing a joint military force between Russia and leaders in Abkhazia, a so-called breakaway region of Georgia. Along with the region of South Ossetia, Abkhazia was recognized by Russia and a very small number of countries loyal to the Kremlin as independent after Russia invaded Georgia in 2008. Georgia regards the two regions as occupied. Among other provisions, the joint military agreement allows for a Russian military base in Abkhazia, along with motorized rifle battalions and artillery and aviation groups. Also, in case of a potential threat or war, troops in the United Group would be under the command of a leader appointed by the Russian Defense Ministry. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Georgia denounced the agreement, saying these kinds of provocative steps by the Russian Federation serve the purpose of ultimate annexation of the occupied regions of Georgia, which is a complete disregard of the fundamental principles and norms of international law and undermines the established international order. In a written statement, State Department spokesperson John Kirby said the United States strongly opposes the agreement between Russia and the de facto leaders of Georgia's breakaway region of Abkhazia regarding a joint military force. We do not recognize the legitimacy of this so-called treaty, which does not constitute a valid international agreement, said Mr. Kirby. The United States' position on Abkhazia and South Ossetia remains clear. These regions are integral parts of Georgia, and we continue to support Georgia's independence, sovereignty, and territorial integrity. Russia, he declared, should fulfill all of its commitments under the 2008 ceasefire agreement, withdraw its forces from pre-conflict positions, reverse its recognition of the Georgian regions of South Ossetia and Abkhazia as independent states, and provide free access for humanitarian assistance to these regions.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage,
www.voanews.com/editorials.